Hey guys, this is Wade. I wanted to just say, in light of the accident this week, I know everyone out there is really upset over what happened. We don't know what happened. We heard that the cable didn't necessarily break. It sounds like the block broke or something of that nature. So I just wanted to say to the fallen climber's family, our hearts go out to you. It's very sad, very terrible, and we're very sorry that this had to happen. And I'm sure all you climbers feel the same. I just want to throw this in at the beginning. I wrote about it. I usually don't put anything in the podcast. Well, I don't think we had any accidents since I started the podcast. So our hearts go out. Rest in peace, young man. And in this, right before the holiday season, it's a shame that this had to happen. And all we can do is just look at what happened and learn from it and pray to God it doesn't happen again. All right. Thank you. Hey, guys. On today's podcast, we have Lane Faulkner, one of the co-creators of Critical Mindset. And what Critical Mindset does is what he's doing, what Lane's doing, is putting together trauma kits. If you don't know what a trauma kit is, I got the website in my blog, criticalmindset.com, all one word. Critical, C-R-I-T-I-C-A-L, mindset, M-I-N-D-S-E-T.com, criticalmindset.com. And Lane's an ex-Marine. He'll get into that in this call. Quality's not as good as I would have liked it to be, but you know, it was. We set up a call, we got it together, and we're doing the best we can anyway. So he has different trauma kits. For those of you who don't know what a trauma kit is, it's beyond a first aid kit, okay? It's not just for cuts and bruises and infections and bee stings. Bee stings are a big deal. Bee stings can kill you or at least put you in a hospital. So I don't want to make light of that. But what a trauma kit is when there's a severe accident on the site. I'm trying to think how to word it. Let's say you could you have a puncture wound, a deep, serious puncture wound. Someone falls and creates a serious problem. What these trauma kits are there to do is to keep someone alive until the professionals can get there. And what you want to do, obviously, if you get this trauma kit, you want everyone on your crew trained to use it. This can be anything from like I said, a puncture wound to the abdomen, to a dislocated shoulder, to a broken bone, a severely broken bone, and anything that would cause a severe problem that you need to take care and comfort somebody. You need to maybe set a bone, or you may, if there's a puncture wound, you may need to help the guy breathe. You may have to drain blood if there's a serious, internal bleeding. I'm trying to think how to word this. Bear with me, guys. So the point of these trauma kits are for you to treat somebody on site up until the EMTs get there, emergency medical technicians, the EMTs, or the fire rescue, or whoever you called from 911. Because if there's a serious problem, you may or may not be able to move them. And even if you move them, you want to keep them alive until you get to the hospital. That's the key, guys. That's the purpose of these trauma kits. You want to keep the victim alive until they can get professional help. I would say chances are good you're not professional help. You're working at a tower site, not in a hospital. You want the people to work in the hospital or to work on an ambulance to get there and help the guy that got hurt. So these are beyond a first aid kit. That's why I wanted to do something on this, because I think a lot of people buy first aid kits and they think that that's good enough. Well, let me tell you something. I think now, with everything that's been going on in the tower industry, it's time to step it up. It's time to not only get all that you need to keep someone alive, but also get the training you need so you know how to use it. And guys, trust me, training, I know a lot of us think it's a pain in the butt to get certified and everything, but I think if you can get trained, And I should take more training, but I'm not in the field anymore. But I think if you can get trained as soon as you can and as often as you can. Because I know back when I was climbing, you know, I would do the CPR and first aid classes. We would do them at least twice a year, sometimes, you know, three or four times a year. I think actually the more you do it, the better it is, because it becomes a matter of routine and it gets drilled into your head. The OSHA classes are usually once a year. And I know when you do climbing and safety rescue, we used to try to do that quarterly. We wanted to do it once a month, but it's just so hard to get an entire team together. With that said, if you have a down day or a down couple days where you have downtime, it'd be a good time to go out and practice rescue. And that's the point I'm trying to get across here. When you have off days, if you can really make use of that time, and I say good use of that time, and you can start to practice things that you don't normally do. Rescue, pulling someone off a tower. Doesn't have to be high, guys. I mean, chances are wherever you're working, you have a tower near you that you have access to. Or now, a lot of these larger companies have towers inside where you could practice. I'm not saying do it unsupervised either, but let's say even if you go up 20 or 30 foot, and you pull somebody off and just practice your controlled descent. I would have used a Fisk, but now, you know, we have the Petzl ID. And just practice it. Get used to it. Feel comfortable with it. Feel comfortable pulling somebody off. Make sure all the safety lines are in place. Like what we used to do is when we pull someone off, everyone had a rope grab, because we used to run ropes down. That way, if something bad happened or if something didn't go as planned, the rope grab was your safety for the victim, too. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. The point is, I want to think safety. I want to think you can do everything you can to help your coworker out. Sometimes the best thing you can do is call 911 and wait for help. But what I'd like to do is for you guys to be able to take action and be able to help your coworker however you can. Get them to safety, make sure you can treat them until the professionals get there. At the end of the day, we all want to go home. When you're on the tower site with your coworker, you have to decide what's best for them and what's best for all of you. If you can't rescue that coworker and you can't get them off the tower, and you have to wait for fire rescue or somebody like that, that's fine, as long as at the end of the day, everybody goes home safe and sound. So I'm going to have more blogs and posts about that coming up. It's just I've been busy with a lot of interviews lately. So with all that said, I want you guys to listen to Lane. He's a good man, ex-Marine, and he came up with this doing the trauma kits part-time on the side because he wants to help the industry. He was a tower climber. He's still working out there in the field. He's trying to get this business going, and I admire him for that. You know, God bless him, because he found something that we really need out at a tower site, that we really need in the field. You guys may not think you need it until something bad happens. By then it's too late. You know, mail order takes a couple days. The training is something that you need to embed in your mind. All right, now I didn't mean to throw one more thing out to you guys, and I know all you guys that own that run crews are thinking, one more thing to buy, but let's face it, it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. Anyone who's worked at a tower site knows that. They know that to be true. All right, be safe, be smart, and pay attention.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been super busy trying to get everything going, so... What I'll do... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's pretty busy. I mean, my company's been around for just over 2 years. Really, the beginning of it was inception, figuring everything out. But yeah, I've been really pushing lately and getting out there and getting going. Well, yeah, it's been pretty busy lately.
Oh, that's good to hear. At least business is good then. How's business?
I'd say business is good. This isn't my full-time work, which I wish it was, because I absolutely love it. I work on this kind of stuff during my lunchtime and from about 10:30 at night to 1 in the morning. So
now I'm impressed.
You probably get that.
I'm doing the same thing. I got a full-time job, and then I got the blog and the podcast on the side. And that, yeah, you got to sort of fill in all the time and try to make it all fit.
Right.
So, well, I'll tell you what. I'll probably throw that in there. Why don't I'm gonna start out with an intro where I talk about you and your company and everything. But why don't we'll just start now and go into like what you're about and how you started the company and just tell us about yourself and how you what led you or inspired you, I guess we could say at this point, to start the company. With Critical Mindset, by the way, I should say that because I'm going to put this on the air. So we're talking to Lane Faulkner of Critical Mindset, who's co-owner of the company, and they basically, and Lane, you can correct me, like when you start talking, from what I see, you make trauma kits, and you make a lot of trauma kits is really it. And I saw you had training on the website on how to use a trauma kit, and then I saw you guys. It looks like you do on site training as well. So now I'll let you go into how you started the company and everything. Sorry.
So really, I guess to say why I started the company goes back quite a ways. I'm United States Marine Fire Active Service, and I, my job in the Marine Corps, I was a crypto guy, and I felt during my service, I felt like I missed out on the Super Bowl, and that was the war against terror. And when I got out, I extremely regretted it. I still think about it every day. When my service was up, I tried to figure out what I do. And I remember in one of my leadership courses that I took, just a hard-hitting gunny said that not everyone will stay here, but my job is to make you the best Marine I can and the best civilian when you get it done. So my thing as a service did not change my oath. So naturally, I'm a concealed handgun carrier, and because just the inherent vulnerabilities of a human and my training in the military, I knew that medical was a big part of it. You know, if I carry a gun, it's because I'm aware of the dangers out there. I'm huge adventure, you know, hunting, fishing, outdoors. I love all that stuff. I have children. So I understand how people get hurt and what it does to you, how quickly things get out of control. So I always carry a trauma kit. My big problem was that a lot of the military stuff was not accessible to civilians, whether it be price or just being able to get a hold of it. I did get a hold of it because of just knowing how to do it, and I was carrying a trauma kit. And then I lost a good friend that I worked with, who was a mentor, a leader, just a badass guy, Gunnery Sergeant DJ State. He was an EOD tech, and never mind.
Well, that's all right.
He lost his life in the war over there in the Plymouth province, and that hit me pretty hard. And
sorry to
I
hear
wanted
that.
To. I appreciate it. So I started just taking things a lot more serious, because I vowed basically what I did is I vowed to never ever miss out on the opportunity to stop evil. Evil can be people. Evil can be just getting hurt. I just do whatever I can, right? One of my good friends, Josh Berry, he's a sailor, prior active service. We got together and we just started thinking, man, you know, what are people are just missing out on so much and taking things to the next level. And the inception of the company Critical Mindset was, you know, we're civilians. I'm not a door kicker. I'm not a special ops guy. I'm a regular guy, but I have extraordinary expectations of myself. So I firearms, medical, that was it. I was an all-out student on combat and human psychology, the human body. So I shared a lot with that, and I realized that people did not know a lot. So he started catching on this, and he started pushing me hard, and we started the company. And it started out just wanting to share, combative firearms for self-defense and the trauma kit. Everyone wanted to know what was in my bag, learn more about it. So that's really how it started. And then just a lot of contacts I had, a lot of police departments. There was a big need and void there. I worked for Day Wireless, tower climber for many years, and there was a big need there. And from there, it's just the company's evolved, and I do combative firearms training and trauma care.
Well, I got to tell you, Lane, one, thank you for your service. I really appreciate it. Two, I'm glad you're a tower climber because you understand what climbers go through as well. And really, I do appreciate everything you've done. And you probably know here in the town, warriors for wireless, where we're trying to, when guys get out of the service, you know, we're trying to get them into wireless jobs. And it's not just tower climbing, whatever they're interested in. You know, there's tons of jobs in wireless, especially in today's world. And that's something I used to promote Warriors for Wireless more, but now it seems to really have legs of its own because they're talking about it all the time. So, and Warriors for Wireless, it's a good program. I'm glad you got it started. It just took a little while to get off the ground, like programs do. But the trauma kits are pretty cool. I mean, I looked on your website. It's really a cool thing. I mean, I think it's great that you can you put these kits together to help people. And what I really think is great is you have the training, the videos for training on your website as well, which, so everyone knows, criticalmindset.com. And you have your sayings on there, like I see of Semper Fi, obviously, Marine. But you also have Fear No Evil. I see that on there all the time because you just mentioned about evil. I didn't want to talk over you, but yeah, you have Fear No Evil. And then, what's the one at the end of your email? You always have one, what's it say?
Oh, keep it tight.
Yeah, keep it tight. Where's that come from?
You know, I don't know. My friends, all my close friends know me for being off the wall. And I guess I'm always the guy that keeps that military doctrine in everyday life. My wife will probably tell you that as well. It's a big part of me. I enjoy the way military life works. And that's what I love about this opportunity is I'm able to bridge that gap of some extraordinary military doctrine, thinking, way of life, mindset. And that's my major goal, is to bridge that gap between civilian life, because you don't have to be, you know, a door kicker, a police officer, you know, some crazy thing to understand the value of a trauma kit. You know, I mean, what is keeping this life in our body? You know, there's many existential thoughts on that, but this gives us a choice again. So keep it tight. Goes along with the critical mindset, the name of our company. So much of it is an attitude, right? So keep it tight is my way of saying, pardon my Marine Corps jargon, but keeping your shit straight. I have to edit that one, sorry, but that's how I live, that's how I believe, always be improving. Inside of the all the tags, when someone buys a kit, it's got a list of the content. On the other side, it says minimum is for the week. Always be better than you yesterday. Again, it's just an attitude. It's a way of life. You've been in the industry. You know the dangers out there, and this gives you a choice. I'm all about creating odds or force multipliers. And that's what this does. When you're way out there, it's an attitude. It's up to you. Even if you're not talking about dangers, safety, it's the work itself. I'm always talking to my guys and saying, hey, you got to realize that you should be proud of what you do, because no one comes up and sweeps behind you. You're the last one there. You're the one that completes it. No one comes and fixes things for you. And sure, take that attitude and that pride into the rest of your life. Is a huge deal. Studying on your own, creating yourself odds for survival and death. So, short story long, that's kind of where Keep It Tight comes from, and I keep that close to my heart and share it as much as I can.
That's a good thing.
I appreciate
that's
you
really
noticing
cool.
that.
Well, I noticed it because it's on every email, and I thought it was a cool saying. And the other thing you just mentioned it. You have the other saying. I think it's under training. Good is only enough for yesterday. That's a cool saying too. So,
yeah, that's not really. It's, you know, the Navy deals. The only easy day was yesterday. and this is kind of, that's kind of my take on it. You know, you got to be better. You got to wake up every day and be better. You know, you owe it to yourself and the world that you're going to leave behind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's good you got that mindset. Now, I'm going to go on a rant here for the tower climbers out there. The whole idea of the trauma kits is to be prepared when you're on site. It's one of those things, and Lane, you can jump in if you want to, but it's one of those things that you hope you never need, but if you do need it, you don't want to be without it. I mean, that's how I look at it, because just like you were saying, the tower site, chances are you're out in the middle of nowhere. Not always. Well, sometimes, even if you're on a rooftop in a city, there's no one around. You know, it's not like it's not like you're any closer to a hospital. The difference is when you're out in the middle of when you're up on a mountaintop, you have to drive for a half hour. When you're up on a rooftop, you have to walk down who knows how many steps, or, you know, chances are if something's wrong, you won't want to wait for an elevator. You might, but you don't want to. It all depends what the issue is. So that's something with the trauma kits. I think you should carry them with you everywhere, and I think they should be on the site, not in the truck, because I think we get complacent. And I'll tell you that's true with first aid kits, but this is I think a trauma kit's much more important, because if something goes wrong, you don't have the time to run to the truck. If the truck's parked right beside the tower, that's one thing. But and you probably know this, Lane, but when these guys do their tailgate meetings, one of the first things you're supposed to talk about is to get everyone on the same page about where the first aid kit's at, where the trauma kit's at, where the emergency supplies are at. And the reason you do that, if there's four people on site, the guys on the tower, you may switch, you know, something may happen, a guy may get tired, or you may have a different plan. So if one guy comes down and another guy goes up, and that one guy on the ground doesn't know what's going on, or doesn't know where the first aid kit's at, or the trauma kit in this case, I'll say trauma kit, I'll try to stay on track there, Lane.
No worries.
But it's one of those things that everyone should know where it's at. Everyone should be on the same page. And that's the important thing of talking and making a plan before you do anything on the tower. Every day. Every day. I mean, it's one thing to show up. If you know where everything's at, that's fine. But I still think it's a good idea to talk things over before the crew starts to work. I just do.
Yeah.
If a guy's late, he's screwed up. You know, everyone else is working. That's a different situation, but you got to fill him in. So,
yeah,
I mean,
you're 100% correct, and it's great because I can tell just by talking to you how much experience you have and how you know this game, because you know how important that stuff is. And the great thing is not only are you making sure everyone's on the same page, but consistency goes so far beyond that. I mean, how are you rigging? How are your blocks set? You know, are you doing high and low? Your capstan, how are you setting that kind of thing up? That consistency and that talking about it makes sure everyone's on the same page. Everyone laughs with what you're a team, so you cover each other. The great thing about that is a byproduct of doing that, the way the human body works, or the human mind, that complacency, which you mentioned earlier, this stops that or helps mitigate it. It gives it one more chance to not be complacent about it because it's insight in mind. Another byproduct of that is making sure I call it billboards here. You know, someone puts up a billboard, it's a new company, you drive by it, the first thing you see, you're like, what is that? You may not even notice it. The next time you drive by it, you're like, okay. And then a few weeks you drive by it, you begin to become comfortable with the idea of what that is because you become used to it, right? That's
yeah.
What I call the billboard theory. And by doing those kind of talks and doing those kind of things, you help set yourself up being comfortable with something. Stress under fire is a huge deal when you're doing rescue training, when you're pulling down your buddy from the tower. The trauma kit, being comfortable with it, helps you perform under stress because your body will go back to those rudimentary thoughts and what you know. So it's important to be comfortable and incorporate that kind of thing in your talk. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And the thing I was going to bring up is the meetings every day. Just because you're on the same site for a week, the weather's not the same every day. You hope it is. You hope it's sunny and shiny and no wind. That's not the reality.
Yeah, right.
You know, that'd be great if every day was perfect, but it's not. It's just not. Wind shifts.
Yeah.
You get rain. You get bad weather. The other thing is, you know, there could be something different. There could be a change. It's just it's just smart to go over it every day. That's something I try to push. But you are right about the way you rig towers and everything. I mean, it is. Some days you do things one way, and you may think about it. The next day, you may come up with a better way to do it because you had a day to think about it. Either you're up in the air, you see something. So the second day you come back and you're going to hang, let's say, I don't know, hey, what did you work on? Did you work on dishes? Did you work on carrier stuff or did broadcast?
We didn't do a lot of carrier. We specialized a lot in public safety, so we were doing tons of dishes, generally 8 to 12 foot. We did a lot of tower construction, so we did, still work with concrete rebar, ground ring, shelter set, tower stack, and then we finish it off and put all their two-way antennas online, and dishes in line. So that's where it's more the side of the work that I do.
That's funny to say that. I just talked to Bruce Holstead. He's a guy that got Lyme disease, but,
right. From the tick. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have him on the podcast. Well, he'll probably be on before you. So by the time you're on the air, he'll already have been on. But that's funny. That's great you read it. Thank you. Glad you read my blog. I hope you like it. So
absolutely.
With Bruce, though, that's what he does. He does a lot of dish alignments. He's got four full-time two-man crews. But he does a lot of dish alignments. And the reason I think dish alignments are important, because when you pull up, I don't know, like, I did a lot of 6, 8, and 10-foot dishes. I didn't know anything bigger than 10-foot that I can remember. But the thing about dishes is, usually they have a radome on, or at least a lot of the ones I did had radomes on. But the wind catches them like there's no tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so when you pull it up, the wind, the tagline is a huge issue. Oftentimes, if it's real windy, you have two taglines in the load line. But if you got to put it up higher than all the other dishes, you got to pull it way out. And it gets heavy. One guy can't always do it. Sometimes you have to hook up, a capstan to the tagline, so you have the pull, and then, you're fighting each other, and you need that line as straight as you can to get it up and over the dish. Either that, or you got to maneuver it on the tower. Let's put it this way. Most people don't want to do that. I've seen guys do it. I've seen guys that are good at it. I never like doing it. I would rather pull it up as close, rig it as close to where I have to hang it as possible. Not as close, but above where I have to hang it. So.
Yeah, as little head space as possible, but enough to move it, yeah.
Yeah, but dishes are a challenge, man. I know the carrier guys will argue that they put up the arrays and they're heavy, and they are. I won't take that from them, but dishes are a challenge in their own right, and dishes are heavy too. It isn't like you're just pulling up a, a satellite
dish. When you're talking mountaintop dishes, you're talking your environment dictating you. How many times you've been up on, whatever mountaintop, Bald Peak, seems that everyone else is named around here. But you're up there on the mountaintop and you have your compound, and then 5 feet outside of that, you got 120 degrees.
Yeah. Yep.
And so your ability to tag and maneuver, that's the situation where your environment is dictating or, making your choices for you.
I think being on the East Coast, it's different. You're on the West Coast, right? Where are you at?
Oregon? Yeah.
Here's the thing about the West Coast, and I've done work in California. I never did work in Oregon. I sure would have liked to, but I did work in Seattle. But on the East Coast, when you go to a mountaintop, there might be snow on it, there might not. Depends on the time of year. But when you go to, say, like the Rockies, like I've done stuff outside of Denver, and when you go to the West Coast, people don't understand how the West Coast is. Like when you get close to the Pacific, it might be cooler or colder. But chances are the weather is totally different than when you get in a mountaintop. There could be a blizzard on the mountaintop.
Yeah.
You can drive 2 hours and go from hot to bitter, cold, and ugly weather. And on the East Coast, it's sort of like that, but not really. We don't get as high. Like, the mountains out there are really high. And I got to tell you, from doing work on the West Coast to the East Coast, and even in Central and the Plains, the weather is so different. I mean, it's just so different. And I don't think a lot of people on the East Coast really realize what you guys have to put up with on the West Coast, because I would imagine, where you are, it's pretty much the same thing. You can have nice weather in one area, 2 hours away, it can be, you know, a disaster.
Absolutely, yeah. We drove through the cloud line quite a few times. I mean, that was a regular occasion, driving through it, or you're driving, everything's beautiful, and then you hit the base of the mountain and open about 30 gates, and then you get to the top, and it's a different weather up there.
Yeah, it's something coast to coast. You know, the U.S. is a pretty cool area, but things are so different from the different coasts, so. But, with critical mindset, I mean, it sounds like you're doing well. I mean, your target market, is it construction in general? I know, you know, I focus on tower climbers, obviously, the wireless industry. But what is your target market? Is it anyone who may need this? Like, in other words, I guess what I'm asking is, I can see it in construction. I can see it in tower climbing. Is this something that fire companies would stock on their truck? They probably have a different kit, but is it something like that, or what's your target market?
That's a great question, because I look and think about that all the time. This started because, you know, like I said, I felt like I had something, or I realized from people telling me that I had something that people might value and that I could share. And, you know, in the military, you don't make a lot of money. I got out and did all sorts of jobs, you know, never made a lot, but these kind of things were important to me. And being able to get into some of the good grade things that, and not like a surplus type trauma kit, the pricing was so high, and I could never really buy into it. So my initial goal was to get this to civilians, you know, brothers, sisters. I wanted everyone to be able to have a chance to access this type of equipment and put it in their car, put it on their hunting pack, throw it in their truck, throw it in their school box, and be able to have access to this type of thing at a price point that they can do it and not the, you know, high-speed special operation stuff that is going overseas. It's geared a little bit different. A lot of the bags, the way it's mounted, and just the liabilities. And so you get to be pricier. And I've cut those prices down in distributors from manufacturers. But all the equipment in these bags are on the Tactical Combat Casualty Care approved list, which is the body that governs and helps create doctrine for the medical care that's happening overseas. So that's my initial thought, was I wanted to get this to civilians, which it is working, and folks are grabbing a hold of it. But what happened almost immediately is, you know, every civilian for the most part has a job. So they're, you know, if they wireless, the folks were like, I need this in my truck. You kidding me? And I said, I've been carrying this on my back that I throw in the truck the whole time I've worked here. And they just started clicking with them. So, I mean, they're going in tower crew trucks. They're going in technician trucks. There's some construction and civil work guys that they're going in their trucks.
That's good to hear.
And actually, the biggest environment that I've worked and sold in so far has been the law. It's just gone into this year. Which is great with their local law enforcement agencies. They've picked it up like crazy, and they're getting on their officers, which is great. But at the same time, it's scary that they never had access or a resource with that kind of thing. I think that companies are going to realize that for the price of the price point of where we're at with these, the value that it brings in gaining odds, especially when you're out. We've been talking the whole time about being so proud of things are different in your environment. The whole idea that you get is to mitigate those injuries so you have odds of passing that time to get to emergency services. Overseas in a combat environment, they say they're going out. A lot of times those are more traumatic, you know, exploding traumas, gunshot, that type of thing. But where we're at, it can still be more of a blunt trauma, piercing, puncture type of thing. You're still very far out there. We all know it's a long time to get off those hills with those roads. Or one of our procedures is having all the information for airlift for medical. So this is what helps you stop the bleeding, get the breathing, treat the wound, and get going. You're buying time to get someone else to help you.
And that's a good point. That's what everyone needs to understand. You're buying time. So everyone that's listening, you have a choice. You can sit around and do nothing. You can have your little cheap first aid kit that, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to put pressure on the wound and just hope for the best. But here, with this trauma kit, you can make a difference. I mean, and with that said, I don't want people just buying these trauma kits and not looking at your training. I mean, right. I think the training is a key point of it. I'm not being a wise guy here. I know I'm sort of laughing when I say it, but what I've seen, and I bet you've seen it, so many people, you know, they buy all the gear, and then they don't know how to use half of it, right? So what good's that? So what I would recommend is not only buying the trauma kit, but he has a training on his website just as a refresher course. I think you should look at that training, I would say, for a trauma kit, if you have time, once a month. I mean, how long are those videos, Wayne? Are they very long?
No, they're not very long at all. They're all manufacturer approved. It's very cut and dry. That's the thing, is you just a little basic understanding of human anatomy that you can get a little bit out of the videos, and YouTube's a great source as well, as long as you have a little knowledge to make a decision about who you're listening to. There's just a little bit of information, and those videos will get you to that point where you can buy time.
So I was going to say, here's what I'd recommend. I see you offer training on there. I don't know if you guys offer on-site training or what, but I would tell these guys, probably quarterly is what I'd recommend, but they'll probably do it 6 months or a year. I would get the live training. I mean, that's one of your services, right? I mean, you guys would come on site and train like 15 people. Is that right?
Yeah, we would do it on a case-by-case basis. Unfortunately, right now, we're not large enough, so the cost to do it would be case-by-case. So right now, on that case-by-case, I would do it via conference call and help these guys. Again, getting that mindset, because that's what a lot of it is, and getting the comfort and explaining what these tools in the box are. So it's something, being on-site is something I want to do in the future when my situation and environment allows that. Locally, I can do that a lot easier. It's not totally something I can offer right now, but what I have done is with the videos and being available by phone and sharing information like this with what we're doing, will get you what you need to be able to mitigate that time and give odds of surviving.
And that's what I think is important. I hope you offer that someday. I hope you're obviously, you know, hopefully sales will take off, you know, and you can offer that, because to me, the videos are great. And like you said, it's a basic understanding, and I would recommend the guys watch them once a month. That would be me. If it were up to me, I would say, if you're out at a site, watch these videos once a month, refresher course, you know, and then I'm hoping, someday if you can offer a live course, that would be awesome, because I see a lot of value in that. I just do. I see a lot of value where you could come out, train 15 people, and I'll tell you what I'm going to compare it to. I know we have OSHA classes. I think the OSHA classes are important. The problem is with the tower climber, to be honest with you, when you take an OSHA class, you learn so much about stuff that you just don't work with. Now, in construction, if you're in civil construction, you learn a lot about a lot, because I know a lot of civil guys, they work on almost anything. You know, they tend to throw them into a lot of different situations. You know, guys in plumbing and guys that, you know, the trench diggers and things like that, because I learned a lot about that. But, you know, in the tower, it's mostly steel work and the safety procedures. The other thing we would take every 6 months would be the CPR classes, the first aid classes. And what would be nice with your trauma kit, if you could have something you could add on to that, or maybe in addition to the first aid and the CPR classes, add that on. And I'm just throwing this out there, Wayne. You can do what you want. But
absolutely. You're totally right. And that's one of my dreams, to be able to do that.
And I see it all tying together. And I'm telling you, when you get trained by a lot of these CPR, I'm going to make fun of some people here, but a lot of people that train CPR class, you know, you do get nurses, you do get people that have done it, but sometimes you get people that, you know, they're just killing time. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yes.
They're not passionate about it. Does that make sense? Or you know, they want you
no,
to
I,
learn
I've
and they
to,
want you to get your
I've been to many of those.
Yeah, so, and now, with that said, I've also had classes in first aid and CPR where you had people that really care. And most of those are nurses, whether, you know, whether a male nurse or a female nurse, that doesn't matter. But nurses see a lot of value in it. And they are, I'm going to say passionate again, they really care about you learning it. They don't want to just give you a certificate. It's not about, oh, you got your certificate, you put in your 6 hours, now you're done. It's about to do if there's an emergency. And that's the difference between, you know, some yahoo out there that is just killing time or getting a paycheck and someone who cares. Now, I got to tell you, like I said, people that care want you to understand what it's going to take to save someone's life. Or in your case, like with the trauma kit, buy enough time, keep the person alive till the EMTs can get there.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, that's what I see. So, well, I won't tie you up anymore, but I appreciate you coming on, Lane. And, man, it was hard for us to hook up. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no worries. Same thing. I've been busy here, and I'm actually building, putting together 16 kits for a local police department right now. So I got all the product out. I'm looking at it, the tourniquets, the gauze, the trauma bandages. So I got it here. I hope that what we've done today will help share and open up the eyes of some of these folks so they can learn a little more about it. I think one of the big things that so many people, the percentage of your lifetime when you're faced with evil or injuries and trauma is so little that sometimes you think you're a little invincible. And I've seen some injuries on site, which many of us probably have. But I guarantee what we all have done is on the way home, we talked about how lucky we were it was worse and how easy it could have been worse. You know, if you fall or slip and you're arrested on the tower by your lifeline, you don't fall straight down, you swing. There's pipes, there's all thread hanging out. That's the environment. We got skill saws, drills. There's so many things out there that will not just be a cut or a ding, but they can be a puncture. And that's where these kits have a value on person in the field out there at these sites.
Yeah, you're right. There's so many. What I've seen, there's so many near misses that you think what could happen. And all you need is, like, I would say 1% of those not to be a near miss to understand the value of what you're doing. So
right.
I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, buddy. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And so, thank you, Wade, for your support to the industry and also, you know, reaching out and looking at this and wanting to share it. That's a big deal for these guys and girls out there.
Hey, oh, thanks. I appreciate the words. Hey, I do have to tell you one thing, though. Law enforcement, I never thought about it. It's hard to believe that cops, of all people, don't have these with them every day. I know you mentioned something that's just now sinking in. I'm a little slow. But it just hit me. I can't believe every cop doesn't have a trauma kit in the trunk of his car or even on his motorcycle in that case because –
Right.
Man, that's crazy. I mean, think what cops are up against.
I know. That's where I just, my eyes went wide. I could not believe that there was so much of a, you know, people crawling saying, I got to get these. How many can I get? How soon? And some, you know, and that's where I come in too is you said having them in their cars. We're talking about it in the vehicle on site is no good. It's funny because I share with the police, I say, if you have nothing else and your car is great, but remember when you get injured, it's going to be rarely in your vehicle and you're going to be injured by a situation or evil. So can you fight back to that trauma kit? Or do you have to wait for your buddy to fight to you with that trauma kit? So you're talking about having it in your truck or having it out where you're working on the workplace. I take the same look at it when it comes to law enforcement as well and help consult them on how to deploy it.
Well, wow, that's a good point. You really thought it through, didn't you? I just thought having it in the car was good enough. But boy, you make a good argument.
Yeah, like I said, I'm known for screwing up the box and thinking outside of it.
That's a good thing, though. I'm telling you, especially in what you're doing, that's a good thing. So. All right, Lane, I'll let you go. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time today. Again, I apologize for all the back and forth, but and I may call you again. So, I mean, this was interesting. I'll think up with some more questions. And the other thing I'm going to try to do, just so you know, I used to do a lot of public safety, and I might get back into it again. When I say public safety, I don't climb anymore. I'm like a solution architect where I put systems together and from a high level and a business development level. But what I want to do, what I might do, is I might get back into public safety when it starts getting active again with the LTE build-outs. That's the part I might get into. If I do,
okay.
I'm really going to try to get the word out about your trauma kit because I'll be dealing more with those guys again. I'm just trying to think how we can get the word out. In other words, I don't know. There's magazines out there like I think Urgent, now they're all digital, but Urgent Communications and what's the other one? There's one other one I get on a regular basis. Mission something.
Mission Critical.
Mission Critical. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Mission Critical.
There's a lot of guys there. And I was amazed at how many guys were like, just sit, kind of staring at it, just trying to soak it in because you could see their eyes. They were like, what have I been doing? Because they don't have anything like this. And it just was all clicking. And, which is great for me, but it's like, I was very surprised at how much of a market there is. And, the great thing is, at least out here, I'm able to start locally and get some guys, and they can talk to me, and I can make sure I'm doing it right, getting them taken care of. So it's a good starting point for me.
And I'll tell you what you need to do. I'm going to throw this out there. You're probably already going to do this, but I would get as much feedback as you can, even if they never use it. Just the feedback I would get, if they never use it, just say, well, don't you feel better having it there? And they should say yes, obviously, and I think they will. And if they do use it, I would talk to them about, how it helped them, what could you do better? I would keep in touch with those guys. One, they're local, which is a great advantage. Two, if they want to buy more, you'll be buddy-buddy with them. And three, you'll have a lot to write about on your website. what I'm trying to say?
That's one of my problems. You got to remember, I'm a Marine and tower climber, so I got to work on a lot of that. The website I built by myself, and I use WordPress.
Yeah, that's all I use. I use WordPress.
Yeah, I'm using WordPress, and I built that whole site, and boy, it's been a learning experience. And I've done a few, like on the Mindset Daily. I wrote up just, I did a write-up on a product and just a couple ideas, like perspective. I need to do more of that. It's just, it takes a bit of work.
You don't have to tell me. I'm a tower climber too, although I do type a lot and read a lot, I don't know WordPress that well, but I do know enough now that, I'm getting better at it. I'm not saying I'm great at it. Some people are whizzes, but I know it's hard for you, but trust me, it's a lot easier than doing a lot of other things on the website. if you need help or something, or if you want any help with, a lot of times, the reason I started the podcast, because to me, talking is much easier than typing. It just is. I would much rather talk for 2 hours than type for one.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's just like an email. I'm very, very blunt, cut and dry on email. And the reason is because so much misinterpretation can become of written words, especially if you write really well and it flows. So it's a lot simpler. But with someone who doesn't have that ability, you got to keep a little drier. And sometimes they don't get that emotion or reflection. And when we're sitting here talking, it works. You get a lot more out of it. So I think that's awesome. And I'm going to try and do that. I have some YouTube videos that I haven't published yet. They're more on the firearm side, and I'm going to be doing some tutorials on the trauma stuff too, and I'll share those with you when I get them. But I think that one of the things I want to do next is almost a situational, because like on the Tower Crew side, like I was saying briefly, they people don't realize all that all thread on our mounts. You know, usually you get them, they're long. You got to cut them down. You got to trim them down. Or you leave them long so you can grab that thing, pull it in, and put your back clamp on, you know, easier. So they're long. And when you swing, how easy can that dang thing puncture along?
Oh, yeah. So, totally agree with you.
And that's where the chest seal comes in, because you don't want air sucking in and start collapsing a lot from what we call tension pneumothorax or sucking chest seal. So that's the kind of thing that, like we were saying, like, so you and I, it makes so much sense. So a lot of folks, they're kind of like, why would I need that? I'm not in combat. And it's like, hold on, just because these are combat proven, doesn't apply to all these different things that you do every day. How quickly it can mitigate the effects of these injuries that have a very good chance to happen.
Hey, sorry to change the subject, but I forgot to ask you, is it okay if I put your YouTube videos in my blog?
Those videos, those are actually manufacturer videos.
Okay. You think they'll mind? Is that something I can put in there, or is that going to be a problem?
Well,
if they're YouTube, it's usually not a problem, because I just put the YouTube link in there.
You know, there's a few that are YouTube, and there are a few that I got specifically, you know, because I'm a distributor, so I got them through my login. I'll have to check to see which ones were not.
All right, well, I'll get on there and
I'll
look. If you don't want me to use them, I can just point to your website and tell them to go, which I'm going to do anyway. I'm going to point to your website. I just didn't want to do anything. I was going to do it, but I didn't want to do anything without asking you first. So
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll look into it because I'm not really sure. And that's why I haven't gone out and done my own really intense training. I'm really trying to envision how it can be a tutorial and not a training, because this, in the end of the day, it's still a medical thing. And I don't want there to be a gray area where people just start throwing a tourniquet around places they shouldn't, type of thing, which it seems pretty basic to us. But, you know, as soon as someone gets injured, once they're saved and, it's all done, you know, that's when the lawyers come out. So I've been trying to figure out how the best way to do that, because there's not generally certification on this type of thing.
Yeah, I get it.
That's why that right now I have the manufacturer links, which are great because they're quick, to the point. This is how you use it, stop the bleeding, you know, get into the helicopter, the ambulance.
Yeah. And that's the one thing I would push all the time. You want to keep someone alive long enough for the professionals to get there. That's the key. DMT,
yeah.
I always say, with the professionals, you know.
Yeah, I get a lot of folks saying, like, oh, you don't have sutures and all that, and say, well, this isn't necessarily a survival kit. Granted, it depends on what your idea of survival is. And again, even I tell them, well, in a survival situation, this will get you to the point where you can at least try and attempt to do further treatment, you know, if that's your case. But, yeah, so there's a few different kits. One of them has everything from medicines to, rehydration salts, eyewash, things like that. One of them is all encompassing, and that's the one that we're generally putting on, like, construction and, civilian rigs. And, like, that's actually the kit that started with, the Shepherd. That's the kit that I built and I carried on my backpack everywhere. But then I added other kits that were basically more compact, so you could carry it on the body or smaller, throw it in the glove box, or, you know, police can wear. Like, one of them is actually built out of a magazine pouch for the M4 magazine. Real tight, real small, small slot on your vest, your pack. So,
hey, I got to tell you, this is off subject sort of, but you said eyewash kit. We used to carry eyewash kits all the time. New guys are like, eyewash kit? What's the point of that? What a waste of time. Because, you know, it's a fluid in there, that whatever it is, some type of saline solution of some type. And everyone makes fun of it until they need it. And I've known, I went through a lot of those. you wouldn't believe. I mean, people, well, you would. You would know. I guess I'm preaching to the choir here. But I tell these young, or I used to tell these young guys, I said, hey, you're going to make fun of this bottle until you need it. And I guarantee you, I'd say about half the people in the site needed it at one time. For whatever reason, like guys, you know, I've seen guys that get all kinds of crap in their eyes because it's, you know, it's exposed. And I know now a lot of guys wear sunglasses, even with glasses when you get crap in your eyes. And I'm just shocked. Well, I'm not shocked, but it just seems like nobody sees the value in a simple eyewash bottle. I mean, I'll tell you what, man. I'm not kidding you. In my lifetime, I wouldn't say a lot, but I'd say I probably went through 6 to 10 of those bottles.
Yeah.
You know, where people needed it. You know, it's a big thing, and that's something nobody sees value in.
It's crazy.
I know you do, but people don't get it.
Yeah, I carry Visine in my bag. Just because, like, you're on the tower, and even if it's not an injury to the eye, hopping out there and it's blowing dust because the roads are garbage, or you're out on the ground, or you're doing a connector, and you just sights are dirty, you know, and it irritates your eyes, and it's crazy.
Yeah, people don't get it.
Well,
people don't get it.
You know, so you've been talking to Mike, my brother, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
It was last year. We were down in Medford, Oregon, which is southern Oregon, super hot. We were moving a 10-foot dish off of the top of a building, and the building top was painted white, and it was only like 20 feet up. You know, the building was only like 20 feet. Well, he was starting to get sun, you know, just getting beat from the sun, so he put on a long sleeve, and almost immediately I noticed, because Mike, that guy is incredible. Climber and rig. He's like, I know he's my brother, but he's a genius when it comes to that stuff. And I noticed he started talking funny and saying weird stuff, and his rigging was, you know, working the rope kind of soft. And I was like, God, what's wrong with him? So I had to come down. I was like, hey, you know, let's see what we're going to do next. He came down, and I wanted to see his skin. I noticed immediately he was sweating, and it was crazy hot out. So he started getting into the heat stroke. So immediately, started hydrating him, hydration salt, you know, packed water all over him so that, you know, the evaporation would take away the heat, right? And it was kind of scary, but luckily I was knew what to do and had the equipment to get him going again. And within about an hour of cooling down in the shade, sitting down, get water on him, it helped him out. But people don't realize that you how quick that stuff happens. Wasn't last year someone died? They were taking a guy with heat stroke down the hill, and he ended up dying from heat stroke. They didn't realize that the whole way down the road there was a creek, and they could put him in there to cool his body down. He got wet.
That's a key thing with heat stroke. You're right. I don't think a lot of people understand how serious it is. And
Oh, man.
Yeah, I just think people don't know.
It doesn't kill you. It'll make you delirious.
Yeah.
And I knew the signs of it. And he started kind of talking funny and saying weird stuff and being, like, slow and lethargic. And I was like, that's not Mike. And I got him down there. And it'll, you know, so you can get an injury because your head's not straight.
Yeah.
Not because your heat stroke took you down and shut down your function. And, you know, you get on the tower and you just work.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't.
That's the thing with a lot of climbers. A lot of climbers get on there and they start working, and they're so focused on what you're doing, which is a good thing, but you still have to realize, like you said, you know, you can get a heat stroke, you can get dehydrated. So now they got to think about all that stuff too, you know. They just have to be aware of it. And a lot of times, I will tell you this, when I was on the tower, I would usually be very focused on what I was doing. We left it up to the ground guys to tell us. They would look at their watch and say every hour or two, hey, do you want a drink? I'm sending something up to drink.
Yep.
And if they send it up, you drink it. I know it sounds funny, but you would never
ask for
it. But if they send it up and it's there, you drink it. You just do.
Yep. You don't get hardware. You get a Clif Bar and some water or Gatorade. And you're like, okay, well, let me get this crap out of my way so I can work.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a funny way, because we did the exact same thing. Because Mike and I were on a crew for a while together, and that's what we did. we just say, all right, these guys need a hydrator. And I was his little brother, so he was very hard on me the way our dad was. So he'd be like, you know, he'd send some up and say, there's some in the bucket, drink it.
You have good ground people, I said guys, but, you know, it could be men or women. But if you have good ground people, that's something they pay attention to. Because when you're on the tower, we all think about getting done, right? But we're so focused on safety. We're focused on the job we're doing. And the other thing we're focused on is not dropping the damn washers and nuts. You know what I mean? I know it sounds funny, but that is a key thing. If you drop a washer and nut, you know, you hope you have extras, but if you don't, you're screwed. You know?
So, Wayne, I gotta ask you this. I always ask climbers because I find it hilarious. When I'm at home or I'm on the ground and I'm working, I drop nuts and washers. But I'm on the tower, I could be reaching around something, not even see it, and boom, washer, lock, and nut all on it while the rope's pulling it away from the tower. You don't drop it. Why, you know, it's funny, you get in that mode and you can just, but then I get on the ground and you're assembling something, you're like, God, I keep dropping these nuts and washers.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Don't feel bad, but you are right, because on the tower, you don't even have to see it. You can feel it. And then you don't just put the washers on, like you say, well, are you down, are you up? And then, in other words, if you can put the washers on, the washer, the lock washer, and it, you know it won't fall off, you'll put those on first and then play with it just nuts. But if you're going up, where you have to hold all three in your fingers, you'll do it.
Yep.
You'll hold all three with your fingers, and you'll get it on, and you won't drop anything, you know? On the ground, you drop it all. You got to look for it.
Yeah.
So, yep. Been there, done that. Anyway, I'll tell you what. I'll let you go. Good talk. I hope the quality's okay. I'm on my cell phone, too. So if it, and I'd like to have you on again. You know, if you need help writing anything up or if you need help with anything, let me know. And I really would like to. I got to think how to get out to the other, like, urgent communications and mission critical and get to those guys. Because I'm telling you, dude, if those cops didn't have it out there, no cops probably have a real, well, other than, say, the big cities like L.A., New York City, you know, Miami.
Yeah.
They probably have, but you don't know. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's a huge oversight, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate it because I'm still pretty small and, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't know if it matters if what people would think, but I guess off the record, I mean, I do this in my garage. You know, I build it all, and that makes me proud. You know, my 7-year-old tends to come out, and, you know, I get him involved, and I'm building these things. And so I do it out of my garage. I'm small. My own money, I don't have a loan. So it's hard building up a balance of inventory. And at the same time, working on growing things and getting tools and equipment, and then, you know, trying to get online stuff. You know, you're in business.
Yep.
It's a lot of work.
Hey, Lane, don't ever be embarrassed
that
you do it in your garage. Okay, that if anything, that should make you proud. And if I mean, you're a small business trying to grow. Like I'm doing it with my blog and my podcast. You're doing it with hardware. I would ever be embarrassed too. Just look at the show Shark Tank and see how many of those guys start out as small businesses. You got to start somewhere. This stuff just doesn't magically happen. We don't all get crowdfunding for, you know, $1 million to start something. You got to make it happen, get the business rolling. And you see these things on the internet about passive income. I don't know who the hell has passive income. It's hard work. I do a blog and a podcast. It's work. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, you know, I don't want you to see out there, but I get guys that, you know, they rip on me all the time. They cut me apart. But I got then people like you that seem to appreciate it, and other guys, too, that appreciate it. And they're glad that I'm at least getting the word out. So, and I'm used to it. You always have jerks out there. It's just the way the world is, you know. But
yeah, trolls.
Yeah, trolls. Yeah, you just do it. It's a fact of life. But with you, don't ever be. You're doing what you're doing is for the greater good. It just is. I mean, you're really trying to help people, and you're trying to build a business at the same time. I mean, they go hand in hand in this case. So, yeah, I would never be ashamed of that, buddy. You'd be proud, all right?
I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, I'm going to let you go. I got to run. Sorry, Lane.
All right, no worries. Me too.
Hey, take care.
You wait. Thanks.
Bye.